Welcome to Parents Perspective. Dave, what are you doing? Jen asked her pajama-clad husband.
Oh, he replied sheepishly, I just thought I'd try these tonight.
Earmuffs? Jen shrieked. You're wearing earmuffs to bed?
Well, we do have to get some sleep, he responded. Got any better ideas?
Oh, I don't know,
Jen sank down beside him. Samantha will have to learn how to sleep and stay asleep eventually.
Yeah, like when she's 14, Dave retorted. Isn't there something we could give her, like a baby sleeping pill, that would get us some rest?
From a parent's perspective, what can we do to help our little ones get to sleep and stay asleep more easily? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guests have worked on this issue and have some valuable suggestions. Kim West is a licensed, certified social worker, clinical, who has been in practice for more than 12 years. Known as the Sleep Lady by her clients, over the past 10 years, she has helped more than 1,000 tired parents learn to listen to their intuition, recognize their child's important cues and behaviors, and gently create changes that promote and preserve his or her healthy sleep habits. She has 2 young daughters and lives in Annapolis, Maryland. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Kim.
Thank you.
Joanne Kennan is a Washington, D.C. journalist who specializes in health and health policy. Her work has appeared in numerous national publications, including The Washington Post, Parenting and Pregnancy magazines. She consulted Kim West when her youngest son was still waking up repeatedly through the night at age 2. After resolving most of his sleep problems, Joanne and Kim decided to write a book together, adapting Kim's clinical program to one that moms and dads could do on their own. The result is their book, Good Night, Sleep Tight, The Sleep Lady's Gentle Guide to Helping Your Child Go to Sleep, Stay Asleep, and Wake Up Happy. Joanne is the mother of 2 boys, ages 4 and 14. We're so glad you can be with us today, Joanne.
It's great to be here.
So what's the biggest myth parents believe about children's sleep problems?
I would have to say there's 2. One is that their child will outgrow the sleep problem, and 2, that their child doesn't need as much sleep.
So what do you do with that? Do they outgrow it?
No, I don't find they do, because putting yourself to sleep is a learned skill. So if you never learn it as a baby, your sleep crutch changes. So for instance, if you're a baby and you have been taught that the way to go to sleep is to be nursed to sleep, and then later on it usually can be walking, rocking, laying down with, and the studies even show that if our children never learn it, that they're at risk for adult insomnia.
Sounds like you have some strong opinions about those methods you just mentioned.
I do. I call them a sleep crutch, something that has to be done to you or for you to put yourself to sleep, and so that the child isn't able to learn how to do it for themselves.
What's the most important thing parents should remember about these issues?
They can be fixed, and they can be fixed at every age. I wish I had met Kim before I had my second child, because then I would have not have been such a tired mother. But, you know, you can either learn at the very beginning, and our book has a lot of information for a pregnant mother or the mother of a newborn on how to avoid these problems, but that you could also fix the problems with a 6-month-old, a 9-month-old, a 12-month-old, a 15-month-old. We go all the way up to age 5.
I think that is very reassuring to know that we haven't missed out if our child is a few years old already.
Right, but the other thing is you're not going to fix it in one night. I mean, sometimes Kim can work a miracle and fix it in one night, but usually parents have to remember their child has developed these sleep patterns or sleep crutches or sleep behavior over months or years, and it hopefully it won't take years, but in most cases it'll take days or weeks of teaching your child a new way of falling asleep. And a lot of parents, I think Kim has found, are skeptical at first, and they think, my kid is the one who's going to show you that your system doesn't work. And then she gets a call a week later, he's sleeping.
Right.
Now, but haven't you found that some kids really don't need as much sleep? You said that that's one of the 2 myths. They all need the same amount of sleep?
Yeah, most parents are really, they're pretty shocked to find out that children's sleep needs at night alone hover around 10 to 11 hours for almost 10 years. And that you shouldn't be off that average by a total of an hour. And I find that to be very accurate in the families that I work with. Not that children aren't getting less, but they're not functioning well.
Could you explain the differences between your method of helping children go to sleep and other popular techniques that are around?
Mm-hmm. I'm more of a middle of the road. So if there are more crying out methods where you put the child in the crib, drowsy but awake, and you leave and you check on them in intervals, the Ferber techniques.
That means you come back and keep checking on a crying child?
Yeah, that you would check on your baby in 5-minute intervals, then 10-minute intervals, and 15 and 20 and so forth until hopefully they've gone to sleep.
And you mentioned Ferber, which I think you should explain a little bit for us too.
Dr. Richard Ferber is out of Boston, and he's the doctor who recommends the checking on your child in increasing intervals, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes.
And there's some systems where you don't even check that often, where you check once, make sure the kid is physically safe, and then you just leave them. It's called the extinction method. You just let them cry.
Oh my goodness.
You just let them cry, yeah.
I guess that must take a toll on parents.
Absolutely. And then on the other side would be the parents who are practicing what we call reactive co-sleeping, meaning that they're sleeping with their child not because they want to practice the foundation of the family bed, but because they don't know of another way to get their child to go to sleep and stay asleep.
What is the family bed? That sounds like it must be a pretty big item.
It is. When you sleep with your parents. Until you're on your own and want to go naturally to sleep in your own room.
So in the family bed, does that mean if the kid wants the dog to also sleep in the bed, that you've got two grown-ups, two kids and a dog or something? I mean, it's...
Sure. And more than one child.
There are people who choose to do that and make a committed decision. This is how they're going to live. And Kim doesn't say you can't do that. Kim's, if that's really what you want to do... And some there's several books on it, and people, I have friends who've chosen to do that. I know people who choose to do that, and that's fine if that's your choice. What we're working on more is the parents who are doing that because they don't know what else to do, not because they're philosophically or emotionally committed. It's just like the kid somehow ended up in their bed, and they don't know how to get the kid out of their bed, or the families who decided to co-sleep, to have a family bed, and after a year, 2 years, 3 years, however long they do it, however many kids, however many animals, they need help getting the child out of the bed. And we have a section on the book on how to make that transition in as gentle a way as possible. So there are people who sleep in a family bed for years, get plenty of sleep, and everybody's happy, and that's fine. We're dealing with the people who, we use the phrase in the book, instead of co-sleeping, it's all co and no sleep. If you're in a bed and you're awake and you're all miserable, then you have to think about whether this is working for you or not. And then if it's not working for you, Kim gives a lot of advice on how to transition.
It would seem to be a really good method of birth control. I can't imagine.
Yes, and I'm sure some people use it as that.
What kinds of techniques do you actually recommend?
We recommend the Sleep Lady Shuffle, where you stay with your child as they learn to put them to sleep. And so I have a parent sit next to the crib. Of course, always put into the crib drowsy but awake, not completely asleep. I want them aware. Then the parent stays with the child and can offer physical and verbal reassurance, pick them up if they're really hysterical, put them back down, and stay the whole time until they're asleep, and do the same thing at each wakening. And then I have you move your chair every 3 nights until you sort of fade out.
And so it works?
It does. It absolutely does. The average is about 7 to 10 nights they're sleeping through the night. And there tends to be less crying, and the parents end up feeling more secure that they're not abandoning their child and that they're there for their child, and their child can trust them that they are.
There's still some crying for many of these children or babies when you put them down and say, go to sleep. But when you're there in the room with them, and I went through this as a parent, I could not have just shut the door and walked away and let my child scream. I just couldn't do it. I was able to put up with some tears when I was sitting 4 inches, 8 inches, I don't remember, but not very far away from him, and I could lean over and I could pat him and I could talk to him, and I could... You don't want to be so involved that that becomes a sleep crutch. You want to be present enough for your child that they know that you're there and they feel safe and they feel they can go to sleep with you right there. And then gradually you move away over a period of about 2 weeks it takes to get out of the room. So the child does cry, but they're not crying as hysterically because you're there. They're crying, I don't really like this. It's that kind of cry. It's not, oh my God, you left me alone in the dark, now what I do kind of cry. And of course, we as parents are projecting a lot of this. We don't really know exactly what a 3-month-old or a 6-month-old or a 9-month-old is crying about. So, you know, we as parents are responding to our child's tears. I was able to listen to some tears. It wasn't an out-of-control, horrible amount of tears. I was able to listen to a modest amount of tears when I'm there, able to comfort him, and I knew he was okay, and he knew I knew he was okay. I don't have a huge tear tolerance. I still don't. I understand there are times that there are going to be tears in life. Tears are a way your child communicates when they don't have words. Tears are a way they communicate for several years after they have words. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it's easier when you're a four-year-old, you can communicate than with an 18-month-old that doesn't communicate. So my own personal tear tolerance is actually fairly low. And I was able to tolerate that amount of tears because I knew he was okay. And he saw that I was right there. And I was able to do that in a way. There was no way I could have left the room and just let him scream. Particularly, my child had very bad reflux and he had it for a long time. And I wasn't going to, you know, be sitting somewhere else in my house wondering if he was sick to his stomach or if he was just didn't like being alone. So I had to be there. And it worked.
We have listeners of all ages and all different kinds of backgrounds and experiences with children, so we have to ask you, in the olden days, before so many child care books and children's sleep experts became prevalent, children just went to sleep. Is that right?
And well, I'm the oldest of four, and we're 13 and a half years apart, and my mother claims none of us ever slept, and that now that she's 70, she says she's still trying to catch up all those years of not sleeping. So I don't know, I'm personally, Kim may know, I'm not aware of any empirical studies of whether kids slept more. I, out of curiosity, I went back and looked at a Dr. Spock book that was published in the 50s, and there was like four paragraphs on sleep, and in no child care book now would you find only four paragraphs on sleep. One theory and one thing we've heard about, and Kim may want to speak more to this, that we have a busier life, a faster-paced life than we had in the 1950s, or at least we think of ourselves of having a faster-paced life. Women are going back to work after 3 months or 6 months or whatever. I was lucky I was able to stay home longer. And then you get anxious. We hear a lot of people saying, you know, I have to get my child sleeping because I have to go to work, and how can I go to work and be a mother and be up all night and take care of my two kids and blah, 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 blah. And then that anxiety also may contribute to, we're so stressed about getting our kids to sleep that the kids may, in fact, pick up on that. But I think the fast pace, we get home later, we're not having, you know, the children need to go to sleep earlier than a lot of parents realize. They need to eat and go down a lot earlier. A six-month-old shouldn't be going to bed at midnight. And I think that probably the sort of the way we live our life and the hectic schedules we have might make it more of a problem now than it was in earlier generations.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on sleep.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Kim West and Joanne Kennan, authors of Good Night, Sleep Tight, The Sleep Lady's Gentle Guide to Helping Your Child Go to Sleep, Stay Asleep, and Wake Up Happy, about helping children sleep well.
I stayed home when my children were little. I didn't go right back to work. And my kids had an early bedtime. They got up also very early in the morning, but I'm a morning person, so I never gave it a thought. But I see today's young women working full-time schedules at work, and their husbands are working full-time schedules. They want their babies to stay awake later at night, and so they sleep later in the morning. I was with someone recently who is a nurse, and she works overnight. And so she wants her baby to wake up real late in the morning, so when she gets home, she sleeps a little bit. Then she's with the baby all day. So they don't put that baby to bed. Baby's about a year old. Until 11:30 at night. What do you think?
I don't think that's as uncommon as you might think. I think also because of the tremendous guilt that many of us have as moms, which is often, too, how parents are co-sleeping, as we were saying earlier, because it's a way for them to feel like they have contact and touch and connection. When I've worked with parents who are doing that, I mean, if that child, for instance, is sleeping through the night and it's working for everyone, then leave it alone. Eventually, it will probably stop working. I mean, because the child will have to go to school and have to get up earlier. And I think when you play around with the circadian rhythm too much and you're sleeping when you should be awake, it eventually kind of comes back And the child starts waking up, and then the naps are all off on times during the day, and then the sleep is not as restorative.
How young are children when they can finally be expected to sleep through the night? Is there a general time frame that parents can expect so they shouldn't be worried if they're not doing it before this period?
Yes, that's a very common question, as you can imagine. I would say around 6 months of age, they can sleep through the night without a feeding for 11 hours at night. There's a small percentage of children who might need one feeding up until 9 months in that 11 to 12 hour period. But usually if they're growing well and healthy, they should be able to sleep through the night around 6 months.
Have you found that nursing mothers are more able to put their kids down more easily than non-nursing mothers? Does it make any difference in terms of the feeding, kind of feeding?
No, I haven't found that. If anything, I'd have to say that nursing is probably the most common sleep crutch because, of course, of the natural hormones that are released for both mother and child. It makes everybody really drowsy. And if anything, I have to help parents have the child go to bed more awake so that they can learn how to go to sleep and they don't associate the how I go to sleep is I'm nursed to sleep.
Well, when I was having terrible sleep problems with my child, who was just about two years old, when I finally found out about Kim and was able to get her help, I was talking to a friend of mine whose children were older, a very close friend. I know these kids very well. And she told me, well, when her first child, with her first child, she was sleeping through the night at 6 weeks. Her second child started sleeping through the night at 4 weeks. The third child began sleeping through the night at 2 weeks.
These were well-trained children.
The mother went with the third child to the pediatrician, who had now by now been the family pediatrician for many years, and said, she's sleeping through the night. What do I do? And the doctor said, shh, don't tell anyone. Your child, if they're hungry, they're going to let you know. I mean, these kids are all in their teens now, and they're all healthy. They're all healthy. They all sleep great. But I'll tell you, I know these three kids really well, and they were a lot easier as infants than they were as teenagers.
Are naps ever the culprit when it comes to a full night's sleep?
Absolutely. Nap deprivation causes night wakenings and early rising.
Counterintuitive.
It does. It's not logical at all. When children wake up too early, like before 6 o'clock in the morning, our well-intended friends and loved ones will tell us, well, then maybe you should put them to bed later or skip their nap, when the exact opposite is true. You see, when we get overtired and we're not in sync with that circadian rhythm, that internal clock I was talking about earlier, the body secretes cortisol, which is a mild form of adrenaline, which wires the child and causes them to wake up more during the night and too early in the morning. So the body will do it again, which will push off the naps or fragment them so that it's like a downward spiral. So you actually have to make sure your child is well napped and going to bed early enough to reduce the night wakenings and the early rising.
And you recommend the same techniques when you put a child in for a nap that you would use at bedtime at night.
Absolutely.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on sleep.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $10 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Kim West and Joanne Kennan, authors of Good Night, Sleep Tight, about helping children sleep well.
How can parents keep to their child's sleep routine when there are interruptions like sickness or travel or early waking from anything or teething or any of the number of things that come along in our lives?
Once a child knows how to put themselves to sleep, has that skill or that tool in their toolbox, then they can bring it with them anywhere, whether it's, a vacation or grandma's house for a special overnight, and it really makes it a wonderful difference. If they're sick, what I usually tell parents to do, because sometimes a child will get sick while I'm working with the family. So if you're doing the shuffle and you're sitting with your child and you've moved out into the hallway, as an example, and your child gets an ear infection, then I'd have you sit closer to the child while they're sick. And then once they're feeling better, move back out. And the most important thing with traveling is not getting your child overtired. So if you need to have your child have stroller naps or car naps, I'll tell parents, go ahead and do it, and just try not to have them have too late of a bedtime.
Even when kids get thrown off, I mean, my child doesn't sleep well still when we're traveling, but he can then, instead of having 2 weeks to get him back on track when we get home, it's 2 days. And he sleeps better traveling than he used to. He's still not a great sleeper elsewhere. I can go away for the weekend, be tired for a day, and I don't have to be tired for 6 months. So, you know, he has the ability to readapt. And we actually say in the book, we give advice on how to get over the traveling. When the sleep skills are still fairly new, you may have to go through the shuffle again, but it'll be a compacted version. It'll be much quicker and easier because the child has learned it once. So it'll be a refresher course. So instead of 2 weeks, maybe it'll be 4 days, or it'll vary a little bit by the age and how long it's been and whether it was a vacation or illness and how often, you know, it'll vary case by case. We actually have a whole chapter in the book called Routine Busters because everyone experiences them. Life is, no matter how we try to plan life, it's just not that predictable. And you have to know how to get your kid back on a schedule, get them back on a routine. And when we talk about schedules and routines, it's a guideline. It's not, you know, it's not a religion. There's going to be some variation. We understand there's some variation. We don't tell you, you know, you have to totally have your life totally regimented down to the minute because life just isn't like that. But you should have a basic schedule to work from. And parents sometimes resist that and say, well, I won't have freedom. Well, actually, you have a lot more freedom. If you know your child is going to be sleeping between 2 and 4 in the afternoon or 1 and 3 or whatever it turns out to work for your family, you know that that'll give you 2 hours where you can do this or you can do that. You know your child will then be really up and happy at 3 o'clock and you want to have a friend over to see your toddler. Well, have them over at 3:30 when they're up from their nap and happy and cheerful, not when they haven't. It's not haphazard. You know more or less when your child is going to be social, when you can have a little time to yourself, when your child is going to be totally unsocial because it's 15 minutes before nap time. You actually, the schedule gives you more freedom as a parent. It doesn't take away your freedom. For the few weeks when you're training, when you're getting onto a schedule, yes, those few weeks, you're going to have a little less freedom because the schedule, getting onto a schedule is going to have your priority. When I had my second child, I thought, you know, he'd sleep when he's tired. And actually, he would sleep when he's overtired. So that was one of my problems. I thought, well, you know, my body isn't the same exactly every day. You know, some days he needs to sleep more. Some days he'll need to sleep less. I was totally wrong. I mean, yes, there's growth spurts and there are times they do need to sleep more and they do need to eat more. But basically, they pretty much need the same thing almost every day.
What resources, in addition to your book, Good Night, Sleep Tight, The Sleep Lady's Gentle Guide to Helping Your Child Go to Sleep, Stay Asleep, and Wake Up Happy, would you suggest for our listeners who want to explore some of these sleep issues further?
There's a National Sleep Foundation and the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. So, for instance, if you wanted to find a board-certified sleep doctor or a sleep study clinic, you could go there. It's aasm.org. The American Academy of Pediatrics website is also wonderful. And then my website, which is www.sleeplady.com. I have a lot of articles there. People can email me about setting up an individual consultation. I have phone classes, and I'm also going to be opening a message board so that other parents can reach out and talk with other parents who are also sleep coaching their child and be a support or a sleep buddy, as we like to say, to each other.
Yes, one of the best resources you have is your friends. When I went through it as Kim's client and she was working one-on-one with me, I got to talk to her every morning, or just about every morning. And we would go over, you know, where I sat last night, how did I interact, did I interact too much, you know, what mistakes I made, what did I do right, how did my child respond, and she was able to coach me through it so that the next night would be better. Well, obviously, we can't do that with everybody in the country. If you're not working with Kim individually, we really suggest that you get a sleep buddy and just another mom or a group of moms, if you're part of a baby group or a parenting group or a play group, or you just have a friend, that you can talk to in the morning. And it's sort of like, you know, almost like a diet club where you have to weigh in the morning and admit whether you ate the ice cream cone at 11 o'clock or night. You know, did you let your child into your bed just that one time? Were you consistent? First of all, it is hard. The first few days of sleep training, the first few nights of sleep training are difficult. You're going to be tired because you're going to be changing things. And instead of getting your kid back to sleep in 20 seconds by, you know, doing whatever, sticking the pacifier in their mouth or walking them or whatever you were doing, you're changing that, and it's going to be hard the first few nights. So having a sleep buddy, in some cases it can be a spouse, but it'll often be better if somebody who's not living in your house and being up with you at night. Someone who's already been through the program, someone who's successfully completed it, someone who's just a sympathetic listener, someone who is going through it with you so you can prop each other up.
That means you call that person at 3 in the morning.
No, eight or 9 in the morning.
Oh, okay, right. That's good. All right, you can keep more friends that way.
Right? Yeah.
Well, it's unfortunate we have to close our conversation, but we're so glad we could chat with both Joanne Kennan and Kim West today about helping youngsters sleep. So thank you both for coming on and giving us the benefit of your expertise.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of Joanne and Kim's book, Good Night, Sleep Tight, The Sleep Lady's Gentle Guide to Helping Your Child Go to Sleep, Stay Asleep, and Wake Up Happy. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 258 and tell us if you can what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into.
To learn more about Parents Perspective and our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. We'd like to remind you about some important toll-free numbers for parents and kids. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, 1-800-THE-LOST. That's 1-800-843-5678. And the National Runaway Switchboard, 1-800-621-4000. 1-800-621-4000. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.